Tonight, meet Perry and Claudia, who are caught up in a hot spell, even though we're in England, and encounter a man with plenty of enemies. You can call this a whodunit. They call it Summer Thunder, and it's from July 30th, 1945.
Signal gasoline. Let every traffic signal remind you, you do go farther with Signal gasoline. Yes, you do go farther with Signal. The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Summer Thunder.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. There is a curious connection between an entry in the records of the British Weather Bureau and a corresponding item in the annals of the Police Department of Plymouth. The first indicates that at 9 p.m. on the night of August 18, 1937, tourists and vacationers on the southern channel coast of England were disturbed by a radio warning.
Attention, all vessels in channel waters between Land's End, Cornwall, and Beachy Head, Sussex. Low pressure area approaching rapidly from the southwest. Violent storm in prospect. Put into the nearest port immediately. I repeat that. Attention, all vessels in channel waters.
The heat was oppressive, deadly. The atmosphere was so heavy and damp that breathing was an achievement. People at the watering places of Torquay and Brixham couldn't sleep and tried to pass the night over tall drinks and sodden bridge games on their verandas. So much for the weather report. The police records indicate that on the same night, a night when the heat had put everyone in southern England on edge, murder was taking shape in the mind of at least one human being. It began in Plymouth, in the second floor apartment of Perry Elliott.
Claudia, for heaven's sake, where have you been? I've been calling all over town for you.
I'm sorry, Perry.
It's 9 o'clock.
I know it's 9 o'clock.
Well, why didn't you call?
I thought I'd better wait.
Will you come to the point?
Perry.
I'm sorry, dear. This blasted heat's getting on my nerves, I suppose.
I know. Now, come on. Let's sit down here and I'll explain. Now, I know this is going to be difficult for you, dear. I want you to try and understand.
What are you getting at, Claudia?
I've been up to Ivy Bridge.
What do you mean?
I've just had a talk with your Uncle Rodney.
Claudia, you had no right to...
Perry, let me finish. He realizes now how very foolish it was to disinherit you.
I think it was a good idea. For the first time in my life, I'm free. Listen, Claudia. I know him like a book. He's frustrated. He doesn't know which way to turn. He's discovered for once that there's something his filth and money won't buy for him. He can't pull strings anymore and watch me jump about like a marionette.
Perry, you don't understand.
I'm afraid I do. Did he call you?
No, it was your aunt.
Agatha? She knows better than that.
She's only trying to make peace in the family, Perry.
I tell you, I don't want his money. Is that clear? He changed his will. Let him leave it that way.
I said he's sorry about it. He wants to apologize.
Apologize? Wait a minute. Do you know why it all happened? He didn't approve of you. He said I'd married a social climber, that I was dragging the noble name of Elliot in the mud. Claudia, I can't understand how you could fall for it.
I said I'll forgive him, Perry.
I see. He's bought you off like the rest of them.
Perry, you're not being fair.
And you're not very perceptive.
Don't shout at me.
Very well. Cigarette?
No, thank you.
Do you have a match? I don't know what's become of my lighter.
Here you are.
Thanks.
Well, Perry?
Claudia, darling. Tonight, for the first time in my life, I feel quite capable of killing a man.
Perry!
I'm rather pleased about it. It'll put me on equal terms with Uncle Rodney.
What do you mean?
I'm going to see him, dear.
When?
Now.
Two hours later, an unreal calm settled around Plymouth. Nothing stirred. Crickets stopped chirping. Trees suddenly became very still. And the bridge players paused to note there was an electric feeling in the air. The mind of the murderer was tense, too. Like the atmosphere. Then it hit. Bridges washed out. Roads became bogs. And shortly after midnight, the telephone rang in Claudia Elliott's apartment.
Yes?
Claudia.
Oh, yes, Aunt Agatha. What is it?
Something terrible has happened. Rodney is dead.
Where's Perry?
I don't know. He and Rodney had a terrible scene about money or something.
Did you notify the police?
The inspector will be here directly.
I'd better come out right away.
Here's something for you drivers to think about. Do all Chevrolets get the same number of miles per gallon of gas? Do all Fords? Of course not. For it's an established fact that the mileage you get depends on three things. The condition of your car, the way you drive, and the kind of gasoline you use. Well, those first two factors, they're up to you. But when it comes to gasoline, that's where I come in. For the same company that sponsors the Whistler, Signal Oil Company, also makes the gasoline that's become famous throughout the West as the Go Farther gasoline. Yes, for years, wise Western drivers who kept careful record of mileage found you do go farther with Signal gasoline. But what's most important is that even today, you still go as far as before the war with Signal. And I'll tell you why. You see, although certain high-octane anti-knock ingredients are reserved for war, the mileage ingredients which made pre-war Signal famous are still in today's Signal formula. And what's more, new hydrocarbons rich in mileage have even been added. Oh, but you're not interested in chemical formulas. You're interested in miles. And there's an easy way to prove that for yourself. Invest your next gas stamps at one of the friendly stations displaying Signal's yellow and black circle signs. Let your own car prove that it's as true today as before the war. You do go farther with Signal gasoline. And now, back to the Whistler.
You're stunned, Claudia, as you hang up the phone. You aren't conscious of the storm raging outside. All you can hear is Perry's voice over and over saying, "Tonight I feel quite capable of killing a man." He should be home in a while, Claudia. What can you do? What can you say to him now? No, he couldn't have done it. He mustn't even think of it. Go out to Ivy Bridge and see the inspector. Find out for yourself. Better take a coat. Perry's raincoat hanging on the rack near the door. Yes, it's going to be a rough trip. But you arrive safely.
Evening, madam.
Hello, Edmund. The inspector here yet?
Not yet, madam. I expect the storm will delay him considerably.
Where's Aunt Agatha?
Upstairs, madam. Be down directly.
Edmund, tell me what happened. Where is the body.
In his room, on the floor. Exactly where I found him.
You found him?
Yes, madam. I found him.
You don't seem very disturbed, Edmund.
I'm not, madam.
I see.
For 20 years I served him. Now I'm through. No, madam. I'm not disturbed.
Oh.
What are you looking for?
Oh, I had some cigarettes somewhere.
There's some on the table.
thank you.
Matches there, too.
Oh, thanks. I've got a lighter.
Can I take your coat, madam?
Thank you.
Get a soaking, madam.
Edmund, may I see the body?
Well, I don't know, madam. The inspector said to leave everything as it was.
Oh, please, it's very important. I won't touch anything.
Very well. This way. In here, madam.
Oh.
He was strangled with a chain. The marks are still in his throat.
A chain? Oh, but his head. Oh, bloody.
He was struck first, madam.
Oh, no. No, he couldn't have done it. Not Gary. Not Gary.
Come along, madam.
Claudia. Claudia, dear, where are you?
Oh, Aunt Agnes.
Claudia, darling. Why did you take her in there, Edmund?
She asked me to, madam.
You should have known better. There, dear. You may go, Edmund.
Oh, it wasn't Terry, Aunt Agnes. Oh, really, it wasn't. She said some awful things, but really...
Just a minute, dear.
Oh, no.
I said you may go, Edmund. We won't need you anymore tonight.
Very well, madam.
Aunt Agnes, I must try and call Perry. He may be home by now.
You can't, dear. The lines are down. I just tried.
Oh, what can I do? I'm sure he didn't do it.
Of course he didn't.
I'd better go back.
The roads are impossible, dear. You'd be taking an awful chance.
I know it, but I...
Now, suppose you get some rest. The storm will very likely blow itself out before morning, and you can go back to town with the inspector.
Yes, Claudia, you could use some rest. But you lie awake until 3 a.m, telling yourself over and over that Perry had nothing to do with it. Never quite believing yourself. You finally drop off to sleep, only to find Perry smiling at you from 100 angles as he toys with a short length of chain. You're trying to tell him, trying to explain. But he continues to smile and tie loops and knots in the chain. Until finally... morning. 6 o'clock by your watch. All you can think of now is finding him. You dress hurriedly and leave while the others are still asleep. The storm has passed, the sky is blue, and the morning air is cool in your face as you drive back to town to your apartment. The bed's been slept in, and piled in a heap on the closet floor are the clothes Perry wore last night. The navy blue jacket and white linen pants. Sodden and muddy. You lay them out on the floor, and then there's a suspicious-looking stain on the left leg of the white trousers. Quickly, go through the pockets. A card with a red smear on it, a fingerprint in blood. Now the coat in the right outside pocket. A short length of chain.
Oh, no, Perry. Yes?
Inspector Dutton, City Police calling. Is this Mrs. Elliot?
Yes.
We're detaining your husband here at headquarters, Mrs. Elliot.
Oh, could I speak to him?
He's being questioned at the moment. If you don't mind, I'd like to come out and have a look at your apartment.
Oh, of course.
I know. I'll be out in 20 minutes.
Very well.
Claudia, that puts it up to you, doesn't it? You can go one way or the other. You can produce the piece of chain and the blood-stained linen trousers and see Perry safely off to the gallows. Or you can do what you really want to. After all, does it matter what he's done if you love him? You better decide, Claudia. There isn't much time. First you burn the card. Then connect the electric iron. Get out soap and warm water and a bottle of benzene. Blood is nasty stuff to get out, isn't it? It takes a lot of scrubbing, but finally it's gone, no trace. You iron it partly dry and rumple it up. There, a little dust from the floor and you can't tell it's been touched. But what can you do with the chain? There's the inspector. Quickly, Claudia, put it anywhere. In your purse, that's it.
Good morning, Inspector.
How do you do, Mrs. Elliot?
You returned rather early from Ivy Bridge, didn't you?
I was quite concerned about Perry. We couldn't get through on the telephone.
Did you think of calling at headquarters?
Why, I just arrived when you telephoned.
I see. Now, let's take a look, eh? Mr. Elliot presumably slept in this room last night?
Yes.
You haven't disturbed anything?
No.
Here. Here we are. These are the clothes that he wore last night?
Yes.
Blue jacket and white linen trousers. I'll take these along if you don't mind. Let me see.
What is it?
Nothing in the pockets, eh?
Well, I suppose he emptied them when he changed clothes.
I'm afraid your husband is getting into this thing rather deeply, Mrs. Elliot.
What do you mean?
I think you'd better come along.
Oh, couldn't I drop down later, perhaps a half hour? I'd like to clean up and...
It's rather a peculiar position to take, Mrs. Elliot. Perhaps you aren't aware of the fact that your husband's life is at stake.
I realize that, Inspector. I'll get my purse.
Yes, Claudia, your husband's life is at stake. And you realize as you ride to headquarters with Inspector Dutton that his fate may depend on what you do with that short piece of chain in your purse.
Oh, Inspector.
Hey?
I've got a frightful headache. Would you mind stopping for a minute at that chemist? I'd like to get an aspirin.
Well, of course. I'll get it for you.
Oh, no, please.
Well, I insisted. It'll only take a moment.
Oh, but I'd rather.
I'll be back in a jiffy.
You can still get rid of it, Claudia. Look, here comes a dump truck. It's filled with dirt. Throw it in the back. Ready? Now.
Missed it.
You see it, Claudia, lying there in the street next to the car. Pick it up. Hurry.
Oh.
Here he comes. The sewer, right next to the car. Coming around the other side, he can't see you. Throw it.
Oh,
here we are. Well, they didn't have any aspirin. Will a bromide do?
Oh, yes. Yes. That will be splendid.
Reeves?
Yes, Inspector?
Mr. Reeves, this is Mrs. Elliot.
How do you do, ma'am?
Would you get Mr. Elliot, please?
Yes, sir. He's right here in the next room.
Sit down, please.
Thank you.
Come in, Mr. Elliot.
Hello, Claudia.
Perry.
Sit down, Elliot. Now, I want the complete story this time. I must warn you that anything that you say may be used in evidence against you. Take it down, Reed.
Yes, sir.
I've said it so often, I know it by heart.
I'll say it again.
I left Uncle Rodney's at 11:15. At 11:30, the storm broke and I got stuck in the mud about halfway home. I was there for 3 hours and all.
That's a deuced poor alibi.
I told you I can prove it. The chap who stopped to help with...
Well, what about him?
I asked him for his card. I was going to try to find him and reciprocate.
What's his name?
I didn't even read it. The card's in the pocket of my blue jacket, though. You can call him.
The card isn't in the pocket, Mr. Elliot. You can see for yourself. Here.
Why, I don't know how... Why, it was there last night. All right. Where's the chain?
What chain?
Perry.
Wait a minute, Claudia. I told you, Inspector, the man tried to pull me out of the ditch with a chain, but the chain broke. I remember putting the odd piece in my pocket. Now, what have you done with it?
I haven't done anything with it. That jacket's exactly the way I found it on the floor of your closet.
You're lying, Inspector. It's got to be there.
It's not there. You can see for yourself.
All right. When the motor went dead, he thought he might... It might be a clogged petrol line, so we drained a quart or so of ethyl from his petrol tank to fill the carburetor. I spilled some on my trousers. I remember there was a red stain on them when I got in this morning. I never use ethyl petrol, do I, Claudia? Do I?
Oh, Perry, I...
Here are the trousers, Elliot. Look at them.
Why, what?
You see, Elliot? You don't have much of an alibi.
I don't know.
And furthermore, can you explain the cut on your hands? They look very much as if you took too tight a grip on a chain. Stayed quite a bit, didn't they?
I was holding on to the shackle when he pulled me out. It was a chain.
Oh, of course.
It's a frame-up, Inspector.
Someone's been in my apartment.
No one's been in your apartment. Except your wife.
Claudia. You.
Oh, I don't know what...
Take him back, please.
Oh, dear me.
That'll be all.
Yes, sir.
You don't need to assist her, Reeves, thank you. I can make it alone.
Oh, no, it's difficult, Mrs. Elliot.
Oh, they can't convict him on that kind of evidence. Just because he can't prove he was somewhere else.
It'll go a long way. We have more positive evidence, of course.
What?
We know, for example, that he was in the bedroom of the deceased about the time he was killed.
Oh, you're wrong. Oh, listen, Inspector, you've got to believe me. This may sound fantastic, but it's true. I destroyed that evidence. I burned the card. I cleaned the red spot in the trousers.
What are you talking about?
I tell you, I did.
Why?
Because I thought Terry had done it. The card had a bloody thumbprint on it. I thought the pink stain in the trousers was blood. I thought I was protecting him.
What about the chain?
I thought that was what he killed Uncle Rodney with.
Hmm, what did you do with that?
I threw it in the sewer by the chemist when you went in for the aspirin. That's why I wanted you to stop.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Elliot.
You don't believe me?
No. Of course, we'll check, but, Reeves?
Yes, sir?
Take the lady home.
Oh, Inspector, please.
I said I'm sorry, Mrs. Elliot. Good day.
Well, Claudia, you're finally beginning to grasp the horror of the thing you've done. You couldn't have made a smoother job of it if you'd tried to frame your husband. There's no way out. Or is there? You do believe Perry, don't you? He didn't do it. But if he didn't, who did? Rodney wasn't what you'd call a model of popularity. He had enemies, plenty of them. Some, perhaps, with motive enough to kill him. Who would know? Aunt Agatha, as soon as you can get a call through to Ivy Bridge, you telephone her. Perhaps she can help. You feel better when she arrives at the apartment late in the afternoon.
I'm so glad you've come, Aunt Agatha. I've made a terrible muddle of things.
I wish there was some way I could help, dear.
You believe Perry, don't you?
Believe what?
He's getting stuck in the ditch and having the man help him.
I don't know.
What do you mean?
He acted so strangely with Rodney last night. I tried to make him understand. The first thing I knew, Rodney said some things he shouldn't have said. And there was a horrible scene. Perry went into a blue rage and threatened Rodney. I had to leave Claudia. I was afraid of him. What's that?
Oh, the back door blew open.
Oh, I'll get it.
Oh, leave it. It's so hot. Oh, Magazine, he couldn't. I know Perry has a temper, but he's kind and good. Oh, don't you see? It must have been someone else.
But who, dear?
Oh, I don't know. But Uncle Rodney had lots of enemies. There must have been someone who would gain something by his death. Don't you see? Perry had nothing to gain and everything to lose.
But he wasn't thinking clearly, dear.
Oh, you must know of someone else. That's really why I asked you to come here. There must be someone.
Why, I don't know.
Agatha, they can't convict him just because he can't prove an alibi, can they?
Well, I think that's pretty important.
The inspector said something about more positive evidence. What did he mean?
Why, I don't know. The lighter, perhaps.
The what?
The cigarette lighter. They found it next to the body.
Next to the... Well, that's impossible.
What do you mean?
He didn't have it last night. He left it in the pocket of his raincoat. I had it. I used it right there in the house. And when I came back this morning, I left the coat. Agatha, somebody took that lighter out of the coat and put it near the body before the police arrived.
Afternoon, madam.
Edmund, what are you doing here?
I've been listening at the door, Miss Agatha.
Eavesdropping.
So that's it. You, Edmund.
Better take it easy, madam. I've got a gun.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, I'd like to tell you about two live-wire young Californians who typify the more conscientious, more thorough service your car gets from a privately owned signal station. I'm talking about Bud Morley and Frank Sager, who just a year ago took over their own signal station in Burbank, California. Both, of course, had had years of experience servicing cars. Well, before long, Bud Morley and Frank Sager had more than doubled their business. Now, there must be good reasons for such success, and there are. Those boys are friendly, courteous, eager to please. They not only give service with a smile, but include many little unasked-for extras. For after all, being in business for themselves, they have a personal reason for keeping customers so well pleased, they'll come back again and again. And there, friends, you have the important difference in signal service, a difference in thoroughness and conscientiousness that can add so much to the life of your car. What's more, it costs nothing extra. It's ready for your car at your neighborhood signal gasoline dealers. And now, back to the Whistler.
Well, Claudia, it came to you in a flash the minute Agatha mentioned the lighter. Edmund. The peculiar remarks he made when you arrived at the house last night. I'm not disturbed, he said. And then something about being free after 20 years. Yes, it all fits together now, Claudia. Too bad he's standing in front of you with a gun in his hand.
You're being very foolish, Edmund. You think you can get away with this?
Matter of fact, madam, that's precisely what I was going to ask you.
What do you mean?
Edmund, you took the lighter, didn't you? You put it in the bedroom next to the body before the police arrived.
Begging your pardon, Mrs. Elliot, but if I may say so, you're underestimating my intelligence. Do you think I'd be so foolish as to plant a piece of evidence which I knew wasn't there at the time of the killing? I saw you use the lighter, you know. I took your coat.
Edmund, I refuse to listen.
That will be enough from you, Miss Agatha. You'll have your chance to talk directly. Inspector Dutton is on his way.
What do you mean?
I heard you saying that Mr. Perry had nothing to gain, Mrs. Elliot. That perhaps there was someone with a bit more of a payoff, you might say.
Don't listen to him, Claudia.
Edmund, what are you trying to say?
Mr. Rodney was determined to change the will in Mr. Perry's favor, madam.
But he didn't.
He planned to call the lawyer this morning. He told me to remind him just before the unfortunate incident. So, you see, there was someone who stood to lose everything if he'd lived. If you hadn't tried to make it too perfect, Miss Agatha.
Agatha!
He's lying. The monster's making this up.
The small matter of the cigarette lighter, you see. Only you could have made the mistake of thinking Mr. Perry had left his raincoat at the house from the lighter and the pocket.
You beast. You can't prove it, you can't.
You have a chance to talk, madam. And you'd better be working on your speech. Inspector Dutton is a mighty critical listener.
Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal Gasoline and Motor Oil and fine quality automotive accessories, and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. This program, directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Harold Swanton, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking and suggesting that you let every traffic signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal Gasoline. Yes, you do go farther with Signal. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Some summer thunder from the Whistler. In a broadcast of July 30th, 1945. A good one to play along with and see if you can figure out who done it. Which, of course, was Richard Diamond's job every week. And we'll see how far he gets with the Joan Wallace case as we return shortly. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You remember the Maltese Falcon? Well, I'm sure you do, and how that began with a late-night visitor to Humphrey Bogart and an office visit, as it turned out, that went badly for the visitor. Well, we have much the same thing in tonight's episode of Richard Diamond. It's called Lady in Distress, and it comes from February 23rd, 1951.
The makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency. Diamond, that's the girl's best friend, you know.
Not this girl anymore.
Oh, Helen, hi.
Hi, you stinker.
Hmm?
Where were you all day yesterday?
Oh, well, you'll never guess what happened.
No.
9 o'clock City Hall. They told me I have to renew my license. Cost $200.
Go on. I'm listening, but I'm not sympathetic.
10 o'clock, my bank. Withdrew $2.35. The wad.
Well, big oaks from little acorns grow.
Exactly. That was the idea. So 11 o'clock, my broker's. Pawn, that is. Deposited typewriter, watch, ring. 1:30, Louis' barbershop.
A lie? You had a haircut 2 days ago?
And I was trimmed again. Louis' tip on the 7th should have been read backwards.
Rick, do you mean you still haven't renewed your license and you lost all the money you raised on your things?
Honey, not only that, I lost a lot of faith in Louis. What I need is a good client with $200, and I... Oh. This might be the one. She's wearing mink. And she's got nice black eyes.
Rick, I'll loan you $200. Tell her to take her eyes somewhere else.
Sorry, honey. The eyes have it. Bye. Well, may I help you?
Is your name Richard Dunn?
I'm thinking of changing it to Richard Zircon, but what can I do for you?
Will you work for me, please? Here, $300.
Lady, I'll die for you.
He was always so nice. Then this morning I met him at the house for coffee and told him what I found out.
Suppose you start from the beginning and we'll see what we can do about him. Sit down.
I don't know how I could be so stupid. They were just using me. I've made a terrible mistake.
We all make mistakes.
I'm in desperate trouble, Mr. Diamond. I...
What's wrong with you? You're shivering.
The cab. All the way from Brooklyn. I found... It hurt.
What is it? What?
Help me, Mr. Diamond. Please. Please. Help me.
She fell into my arms, tearing at her stomach, as if she'd just swallowed hot milk. She was still trying to talk when I let her down to the floor and ran out for some water. When I came back 5 seconds later, she was unconscious. And in another 5 seconds, she was dead.
If it ain't Richard Diamond, defective detective.
And your name, Sonny?
Why, it's me, Otis, Sergeant Otis. You know me, Rick.
Oh, yes, yes, Sergeant Otis. I didn't recognize you there for a minute. You had an intelligent look on your face.
Oh, you think that's funny, don't you? Well, let me tell you something really funny.
Well, do.
Personnel division tells me if you don't get up $200 by midnight, you're going to be an ex-private detective.
One of the reasons why I'm here, Otis, old buddy. Now, on your lunch hour, trot up to personnel and tell them about the color of this.
Ew. Where'd you get all the scratch?
For my client.
But she's dead.
Well, go ahead, say it. She's dead. But dead or alive, she hired me and paid me, and I'm still working for her. Here, you can take it upstairs and cover my license fee for me.
Oh, all right.
Now, try to smile through those tears. There you are. 200. All counted. You won't have to take off your shoes.
Okay, I'll take it up for you. About that dame, Diamond... You know, I gotta see you.
Otis, there's smoke coming out of your ears. I told you that would happen if you ever tried to think for yourself. Now, where's Levinson?
Lieutenant's across the hall in the medical examiner's office. I'll go get him.
Never mind, I'll do it myself. You might lose your way.
Oh, you talk like that. Hello, Rick. Glad you dropped by.
Hi, Walt. What did you find out about the girl?
Medics just finished with her. It was xylitol killed her.
Xylitol? That's new to me.
It's a drug. Petrol base. Been in her stomach about an hour. Judging from the way she acted and talked, it could have been suicide.
What's her name?
Haven't made it yet.
Don't know who she is. You need some new talent around here, Walt.
Well, there's no identification. Prints haven't lined up with anything yet. Too bad, huh? Real nice-looking kid.
I agreed. She was a nice-looking kid. The kind you wait all year long to ask to the senior prom. Watching her die that morning hadn't been easy. It was like standing helpless in the middle of a sudden blizzard that wipes out the flowers of an early spring. When I got back to my office, I was still wondering who she was and how I could help her.
Hi, Ricky boy. I've been waiting for you.
Oh, hello, Bridgie. Isn't it a little late in the day to be cleaning up my office?
Oh, I finished swabbing it down a few minutes ago. I was just waiting to get...
Sorry, Bridgie. No canasta this afternoon. Don't feel like it.
Me neither. Got to take my banjo lesson in half an hour. Waited around to give you this. Found this purse lying in your waste basket. One of your girlies must have knocked it off the edge of your beds.
Give it to me, will you?
Maybe that wore in the mink coat I seen come in this morning.
It was hers, all right. The faint, sweet odor of her perfume still clung to it. But it wasn't the lipstick, comb, small change, and key that made it so heavy. It was the .32 revolver inside, three bullets recently fired. A driver's license told me her name was Doris Romano, and it gave an address. Nobody was home. The lady next door dropped her mop long enough to wheeze out where Mr. Romano worked. I twisted my way down an iron stairway into a furnace room. Doris Romano's father was taking huge bites out of a coal pile with an outsized shovel. I told him his daughter was dead. He slammed the furnace door and threw down the shovel.
I know someday I will do this. You look like a nice young man. Like my two daughters once nice young ladies. They went away from me a long time ago and I'm left here. There was nothing I could do. There is nothing I can do. It's as if they never were. It's better that I go on shoveling until there is no more coal and I die too. I'm better dead.
I took Mr. Romano down to the coroner's office and he identified her body. Later, I told Walt about the purse and turned it over to him. Everything but the .32 and the key. Maybe it was the wrong way to play it, but somehow I felt I could still give Doris Romano the help she'd wanted. She said that she had taken a taxi from Brooklyn. So Diamond went to Brooklyn. I don't know how many cab stands there are in Brooklyn, but I can tell you where you can find 104 of them.
Sorry, bud, I got a fare.
Where, under the floorboards?
In there, eating.
I'm looking for information. Here.
Ah, gumboots, huh? Who's getting cheated?
Did you carry a brunette in a mink coat all the way to Manhattan sometime this morning?
Maybe.
Where'd you pick her up?
Brooklyn, house on M Street.
What house?
How's a little old expense account?
Well, here's a fin.
Oh, no.
That's all there is. Only one to a customer.
Okay, I'll tell you about the house, but I won't tell you about the guy.
What guy?
You surely one to a customer.
Well, let's say we had a change in management. Okay, now tell me about the guy.
Tall, dark-haired, blue suit kind. He was sort of chasing her when she climbed into me cab. Looked like a mash. Oh,
with spring still 2 months away? Come on, take me to the house.
It's the gray one, 900 block. Find it yourself like I told you. I got a fan.
I found the house easy enough. There was a for sale sign on it. The door was locked, so I walked around and back and peeked in the kitchen window. Then I remembered I still had the key that had been in Doris's purse. It worked. Inside, the odor of tar or printer's ink or something along those lines hit me. I was just starting to sniff around when a tall blue suit eased himself in through the kitchen door. He looked at me like I was breathing some air that belonged to him.
You could use your GI loan. You ought to buy it. It's a real steal.
No, thanks. I'm just looking.
Well, we'd charge for that, too.
Oh. Well, I don't think she'd like it.
Your wife?
No. Just a girl in a mink coat.
Name of Doris Romano.
Where'd you get the key to this house?
From her. It was in her will. She's dead.
I'll get my black suit pressed.
I met a cab driver who says he knows you. Said you've been doing a chase scene with Doris Romano early this morning.
Mister, when I chase a girl, I catch her.
I suppose you've got a name.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Joe Riley. I own this house, or if you're a buyer, okay. If not, cop a heel.
Well, I'm not a buyer.
Then blow.
Oh, I didn't know Lugers came that big.
Mm-hmm. And they make holes to match.
Yeah, I imagine so.
All right, Pilgrim, you got a name?
For me or you?
School isn't out yet. Just answer.
Well, there's Richard Diamond, private detective. She came to my office this morning.
What'd she have to say?
Nothing. She died of poisoning before she could say anything.
And the police?
They have her body and identification.
Well, goody for them. That all?
There's still you.
Any cop who wants me can find me listed in the book. I got a permit for this gun, and I haven't got a record. You see, Diamond, I could blow your head off for trespassing. But I'm a real nice guy, so just get out and forget you saw me.
Well, that won't be hard. Half an hour later, I picked up the evening paper, and the lead story stuck out like a white derby on an undertaker. It was about an unidentified man pulled out of the river that afternoon. The coroner had picked 3.32 slugs out of him.
What is it, Rick?
Well, about this guy they pulled out of the river. Anything on him?
Why?
No, just curiosity.
That's a terrible thing. Not just 3.32 slugs, but they'd been filed down the center.
Dum-dums?
Dum-dums. Tore the poor guy all apart. Everybody in the department's plenty sore. You want to see the body?
Some of the time. I know what it would look like. As I left Walt's office, I felt like I was standing on a trap door and the warden had just smiled at the hangman. But I had to take Doris Romano's .32 out of my pocket and look at it. The three remaining bullets were all filed right down the center. Dum-dums. Everybody had a right to be sore. Especially me. It was hard to picture my angel-faced client pumping dum-dum bullets into some guy and tossing him in the drink. But that's the way it looked. I had no choice but to turn the gun and bullets over to Lieutenant Walt Levinson for investigation. And the aftermath was something only a hurricane would understand. He acted like an historian who'd caught George Washington telling a lie.
Well, I guess this kind of proves who knows what who was talking about, doesn't it, Rick?
All right, so who's on first? Want me to tell you what's on second?
I don't want you to tell me anything, because I know everything now.
You know, they could use you in some very high official circles.
Go ahead, make jokes.
I didn't know I had.
A man is found in the river with dum-dum bullets in him. She's carrying the gun that did it. Her fingerprints were on it. And then she commits suicide. Remorse.
Ah, baloney. Why did she come to my office to die? Why, when she didn't even know me, was I the last person on the earth she chose to see if she committed suicide?
Dames in love want to make a big show. Publicity. Go out with a 3-column spread.
Then why didn't she drop dead on the city desk of the Graphic? They'd have printed the story in real blood. Hers.
You were a lot closer than the Graphic.
Now, Walt, I'm going to explain this to you patiently.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen women of every kind. Hard, soft, sweet, warm, cheap, treacherous, mean. But I've never known a woman to lie in your arms dying, look up at you, with the most innocent black eyes in the world, and ask you to help her after she had just come fresh from killing a man.
Psychology, I don't know. But evidence, I do.
She went to all that trouble to get rid of the body. Why didn't she get rid of the gun, too?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, Walt, this is the sweetest double-cross since the 3-way stretch. Somebody planted that gun on her. Now, if you can keep it out of the papers, somebody's going to wonder why the gun wasn't found and come looking for it. Will you give that theory a try?
And I suppose you'll be waiting for them with a butterfly net.
I'll be waiting for them with a picture of that girl's black eyes in the back of my head. What do you say?
Well...
Thanks, Walt. Personnel told me that the gun had been purchased by American Trust and Loan Company in 1941 and permitted to a bank messenger named Dale F. Bronson. The address was an apartment on 63rd Street. When I saw all the expensive cars out in front, I was thinking I should have been a bank messenger. When she answered the door, I knew it. Pure gold.
Well, hello. Tall, aren't you?
Oh, I do my best. Somehow I knew you'd belong to one of those cars out in front. Which one?
Longest low convertible. What can I do for you?
Oh, well, I'll rephrase the answer. I'd like to talk inside.
It's terribly early for me to receive strangers.
Oh. Well, I sent my hourglass to the Sahara for a checkup. Besides, my watch is broken.
Come on in. I'll see if I can fix it. I'm great with the Swiss movement.
Mm, it shows. Are you Mrs. Bronson?
Yes, and my name's Kitty.
Kitty? Oh, nice. It's too bad I have to say this, but I'd like to see your husband. Preferably before he sees me and draws the right conclusion.
He's not here.
Expect him?
You're going to love this. No.
Where is he?
He's in a place where nothing matters anymore. Cemetery.
Sorry.
Don't be. He stuck his neck out and tried to be a hero one day. Somebody shot him and stole the money he was carrying.
You don't seem to miss him much.
I'm still wearing black.
Right color, Kitty, but wrong cut.
It's a new philosophy I've worked out.
I understand he worked for the American Trust and Loan. They bought him a gun.
Don't tell me you're here to talk about guns. Who sent you? Field and Stream?
Well, this is a sort of a collector's item. Recognize him?
No, should I?
It belonged to your husband.
You say it was my husband? I suppose it was. I don't know for sure. We only stayed together a year. He had a lot of things.
After he was killed, what happened to those things?
I don't know. He moved in with his mother. She probably disposed of them.
I'd like to talk to his mother. Where could I find her?
This just isn't your night. She's in the cemetery. Next to him. Heart failure.
Well, I'll wash up, get my pay, and go home.
Just who are you?
Richard Diamond. You can call me Richard Diamond.
Detective?
Fridays.
Arrest me.
Mm-mm. Not until you commit a felony. This is only a misdemeanor.
You're a sergeant?
5-star general. Run my own outfit.
Come here.
Hmm.
My application for the auxiliary. Pass.
Fail. If we ever open a recreation center, I'll let you know. Outside, where things were milder, I lit up a Camel and tried to think of something smart. Then I began looking around for a cab. And that was my first mistake. Two bulky forms slid in behind me, and we walked Indian file for a few steps. When we reached the alley, I turned around to see who it might be. Ooh! That was my second mistake. I didn't have time to make any more.
All right, Rennie. Drag him down this alley. Now, prop him up against the wall. I hope we don't chip none of these bricks with his head. Hey, Diamond. I know it's hard for you to see right now, but can you hear me?
You've got a lot of punch in that delivery.
Do you get it?
If I didn't get it before, I just got it then.
Yeah. I just got one thing to say. Mind your own business. Mind your own business. Mind your own business. Mind your own business.
I went out of business about two punches later. And a nice age later, a yellow cat with one bad eye began licking my face. I guess he thought I was something left over from Toots Shores. When I dissolved back in, I was lying on a soft, white bed in police emergency hospital. Lieutenant Walt Levinson was leaning over me. He looked sad and puzzled, like he was trying to pick a lock with a wet hair.
Rick. Rick, it's me.
Oh, I can hear you, Walt. You've got a mouthful of firecrackers.
One of the radio cars found you lying in an alley. What happened?
That's a bright question. Did I even rate a little sympathy?
Why should you? 9 times out of 10 you ask for it.
And get it. Now, look, Walt, there's an irritated tone in your voice that isn't on the scale. Ask somebody to get me my pants, will you?
You can't walk out of here in your condition.
I got work to do. My client still has a bad name.
Yeah, it's even worse now.
You know, besides being overconfident, you're overconfident.
Rick, that body with the dum-dum's been identified. His name's Sam Gulliver, treasury agent.
Treasury agent?
Yeah, he'd been after your client for a couple of months for passing bad money. Looks like he moved in to make the pinch and she shot him.
Bad money? Bad money? Oh, Walt, what time is it?
11:45. Why?
Well, I guess I'm 15 minutes away from being out of business. I used her dough to renew my license fee.
Well, I'd pay it for you myself if you could tell me who she'd been working with.
Dig, Walt. I know a gray house in Brooklyn that just reeks of printer's ink. And I know a guy named Joe Riley who's probably got some skin knuckles.
Oh?
Well, do I get my pants now? I filled Walt in with some of the details on our way over there. He took it pretty hard. But the thought of talking to a live suspect thrilled him. I knew it would. We slipped down the alley and back at the place and cut her lights. The house was dark and quiet. No one stopped us when we let ourselves in the basement door. The smell of printer's ink was still strong.
Throw the flash over there against that wall, Rick.
Hey. A whole basement full of evidence. Plates, prints, machinery.
You hit it, Rick. Now all we need is Riley.
Just above us, the whole world began to explode. I took the stairs three at a time, walked right behind me. We ran to the front of the house, and from the window we saw a long, low convertible that looked familiar, streaking from the curb. I was making a lunge through the doorway when I tripped over a former acquaintance.
Hi, Nosey. How's tricks?
Riley.
You must be made out of rubber. I thought I bounced you for at least 20 hours. Should we could...
I'll get an ambulance, Rick.
No hurry, Walt. You wouldn't know the difference.
I better get a pickup out on that car we just saw pull away.
I bet I find it before you do.
Huh?
You got a corpse here, Walt. Let me have my fun. I used the cab to get back over to 63rd Street. The same kind of expensive cars were still parked out in front. Only one of them, a long, low convertible, had a very hot radiator.
Oh, it's you.
Tell me how tall I am, Kitty.
Well, I'd love to, but not right now.
I was kind of hoping we could have a drink. Got any hemlock?
I said later. I'm really tired.
I said now.
Well, you are eager. What do you want?
A poor dumb kid who knew she'd been used asked me to help her this morning, just before she dropped dead. And I'm helping her.
I just happen to be fresh out of medals.
You shot Joe Riley less than half an hour ago. Now, don't reach for it, lady. I'd like a good excuse.
Let me go.
Doris Romano didn't know she was passing bad money for you and your boyfriend, Riley. When the agent tried to make the arrest, either you or Riley shot him. And then Doris knew the whole setup. And you knew she was scared.
Joe Riley poisoned her. I didn't do it. I didn't want him to do it, and he was dumb enough to think it was clever to plant the gun in her purse.
But you didn't kill Riley for being so dumb. You had a better reason, Kitty. I talked to a coal shoveler in a basement this morning. He was bitter about both his daughters going wrong. One of them was Doris. The other was you. Those black eyes give you away right now.
All right. Look, I have a lot of money. Real money. Good money. Enough for two of us. We could do anything and go anywhere. Be a chance to stop gumshoeing around and be somebody. And, Ricky, you know how I am. I can be nice. Awful nice.
That's what scares me, Kitty.
Now, listen to me. They'll send me to prison. I'll grow old and ugly there.
If you're lucky.
Oh, Rick, please. Please let me go. I'll give you all the money. I'll do anything. Please. Please help me.
You know, lady, for a minute, you sounded just like your sister.
Dick Powell can now be seen in the RKO picture, Cry Danger. Tonight's adventure of Richard Diamond was written by John Michael Hayes and E. Jack Newman, with music by Frank Worth. Our director is Helen Mack. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Wilms Herbert, and Arthur Q. Bryan.
That was Lady in Distress, and was she ever. Richard Diamond, starring, of course, Dick Powell, from February 23rd, 1951, and featuring some other great character actors in there, Sheldon Leonard among them as the tall guy in the blue suit. That's Old Time Radio Drama for this Saturday night. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you'll join me. We'll have more cases for you to solve tomorrow night and next weekend, too, Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 11. Be there by the glow of your radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.